From coast to coast to coast, you're listening to Terra Informa. Welcome back to Terra Informa. I'm Yvette Thompson.
And I'm Danielle Dalgoy. We'll be taking you through the next half hour of environmental news from across Canada and around the world.
This week, we're getting artsy. And just in time, Culture Days just made its way across Alberta, making the arts and cultural institutions across the province accessible to everybody.
And in an artsy state of mind, we've got an arts and culture show for you this week. We chat with an Ottawa-based graffiti artist turned environmental advocate and found a great gem in the archives, looking at a musician's plight to challenge resource development in her home region.
Sierra Jamerson was born into a family of talented leaders and gifted musicians. She's been performing professionally since the tender age of 11, singing traditional gospel, jazz, soul, and R&B music. Part of that talented family of hers is in the Tahltan Nation in British Columbia. You might have heard of the sacred headwaters in Tahltan Territory. It's the origin point for three powerful rivers that run through British Columbia: the Stikeen, the Skeena, and the Nass. When the oil and gas industry tried to start mining in the area, Sierra's family was at the forefront of Tahltan resistance.
So first off, we're going to set the mood with a piece from Edmonton-based singer-songwriter Sierra Jamerson. She wrote this one just for the show, so everyone put your hands together for Sierra.
Thank you so much. I'm really honored to be here, and I'm really excited. So this first one that we're going to do for you, I wrote it about 2 weeks ago, so it doesn't have a title yet. It's still in the process. Right now, I'm calling it Earth Song, because it's about the earth. I was doing some research before I wrote this, and I found a list of different species of animals that are endangered in Alberta. So a few of those animals pop up in the song here, and I hope you guys enjoy. Something in the present, the beauty of the land that I call home, a peaceful land, a calming essence. I keep you in my heart when I'm alone. I can't imagine life without an ego, soaring so majestic in the sky. She keeps her watch upon my people. May the beauty of her wings never die. And I can't imagine life without a grizzly bear, a swift fox, or a woodland caribou. If your grandchild lived beside toxic waters, tell me, what exactly would you do? What about the air that we breathe? What about the forests and the land? Rivers running dry to fill their greed. Will you make the choice to take a stand? A northern woodland in the winter, trees blanketed by all the snow, home to countless creatures. You and I must give them room to grow. So for rivers run down from the mountains, fish lay their eggs and bravely swim upstream. People live with them in balance. You and I must keep those rivers clean. And I can't imagine life without a grizzly bear, a swift fox, or a woodland caribou. If your grandchild lived beside toxic water, tell me, what exactly would you do? What about the air that we breathe? What about the forests and the lands? Rivers running dry to fill their greed. Will you make the choice to take a stand? Oh, what about the air that we breathe? What about the forests and the lands? Rivers running dry to fill their greed. Will you make the choice to take a stand, to take? Will you make the choice to take a stand? Will you make the choice to take a stand? Will you make the choice to take a stand? Oh, will you make the choice to take a stand?
Hi, Sierra. It's good to see you again.
Yeah, you as well.
I heard you have a very hard fought for story about what the Sacred Headwaters means for the Tahltan people.
Yeah, I do. I guess you probably want me to tell you the story. Okay. I grew up in Edmonton. And every summer when I was younger, we would go up to Dease Lake and visit my grandmother. This is my paternal grandmother, my father's people. They're from up there. And we'd spend so much time with my aunties and my uncles and my cousins there. And so while I never lived there, it's a place that is important to me. When I was much younger, in about 2004, the BC government okayed exploration up north to pursue development. Tahltan people were non-treaty, but the sovereignty issue, right? Being not consulted, right? When people are going to come and basically tear up your basement, that's a huge problem, and it's something that happens on reserves nationwide, right? And so in this instance, my grandmother, her name is Lillian, but we call her Tiger Lil, because she's that tough. She and a few other elders got together and they created an organization called THREAT, and that's the Tahltan Heritage Resources Environmental Assessment Team. And they were not interested in bargaining. They were not interested in compromise. The Sacred Headwaters are the place where the people who still live on reserve get their food. That's the water they drink. That's the salmon they eat. Those are the deer skins that they make their garments for ceremonies for. That's where their houses are. That's the air that they breathe. And they were not interested in drinking water coming from a coal mine or having to fly in food because it's so far north and pay thousands of dollars when, you know, the Creator has given them everything that they need right there. And so they began to fight.
And more than just these material things that people were fighting for, it's considered the Tahltan homeland.
It is.
So I heard that you grabbed your granny on the phone, rested her away from some busy work that she was doing. So what was the story that she told you about that connection that Tahltan people have to the land as a homeland?
Well, what I understand is, I guess it's, there's a few ways. It's important not only because there are stories, you know, folklore talking about like different leaves that grow there that you can use for medicine, like caribou leaves. There's like a fable where a man like got mauled by a grizzly bear and they created a plaster with caribou leaves and pitch and like sewed up his wounds with a woman's hair and then he was healed. So, I mean, I don't know if he was actually healed, but they sent in some caribou leaves for study inland in Vancouver, and they're like 83% penicillin. So, you know, maybe that had something to do with it. Or it's identity, knowing like which mountains to hunt in. It's having a sense of belonging. You know, this is where your people are. When you take the land and the belonging, the home from a people, their culture goes away. When their culture goes away, their identity and their language goes away. There are maybe like 35 to 50 people who still speak Tahltan in the world.
Wow.
And I mean, there are linguists in UBC trying to revive the language. I know my Auntie Frida, she's trying to learn Tahltan right now. I probably should. I can't speak it at all. And yeah, just losing where you are, where you're from, that decimates a people. And I think we've seen that in Alberta and on the prairies and out east with other First Nations very clearly.
So tell me what your grandmother has been able to do and how far she's been willing to go.
Okay, man. I have so much respect for her. I look up to her so much because she's so strong. She actually was arrested with other elders, I think, mid to late 2000s. I can't remember exactly when. It might have been 2005. I just remember my dad coming home with a newspaper and being like, "Hey, Grandma got arrested, eh?" And we were, I mean, you would normally never be happy if your grandmother went to jail, but we celebrated because that was how far she was willing to go. She's been in international news magazines. I think she chained herself to a tree. She stood in front of like these bobcats and machines from like Royal Dutch Shell is trying to explore here. That's like the second largest corporation in the world against 10 grandmas. Like, come on. You know, but they've been able to successfully have a temporary moratorium on any like exploration for development. It's David and Goliath, right?
And now the BC government has extended that moratorium to all natural gas and oil development in the area.
Yeah.
Which is it's a big movement.
Right on.
What do you think you've learned from your aunties, from your grandma?
Well, I mean, strength, courage, and wisdom. You know, she believes in what she believes in, and I think you can even read it online, you know, hearing her say, like, "I'm doing this for our grandchildren," you know, like, she's doing that for me. So I know where I come from, you know, so my sisters and my brothers know that, so my cousins can, you know, it's, even if they took away the things that they have to survive, it's for the future, because it's so hard to preserve a traditional way of life and a culture and pass that on to your children in this day and age, especially for First Nations people. You know, there are so many systems in place that make that so difficult, and that's how we will have longevity. That's how we will maintain if we support the future. And you know, the future is me. So I feel incredibly blessed to have a grandmother who's willing to go to jail so I can come back to the place where I'm from.
Do you think having that sense of like meaningful history and spiritual connection to a place helps people feel more empowered to fight for it? Because there are people who will chain themselves to a tree and put themselves in front of a bulldozer without necessarily having that spiritual meaning to it.
I mean, I can see how that would hurt. Definitely, that would definitely be a part of what could compel someone, maybe even deepen your purpose or your cause, because you feel like you are doing this for something that is greater than you, that will always remain.
Thanks, Sierra.
That was Chris Changyan Phillips speaking with Sierra Jamerson during a live show at the St. John's Institute of Edmonton. That was for a three-part series, Between the Devil and the Deep Blue Sea, that occurred last year. From the shores of Great Bear Lake in the Northwest Territories to Kaministiquia River in North Ontario and everywhere in between, you're listening to Terra Informa. And from the Twittersphere, we're pulling a few 140-character headlines, focusing on hashtag Climate2014. At FAO Knowledge tweeted about the new Climate Smart Agriculture Initiative that captures synergies between food security, adaptation, and mitigation. And at Leo DiCaprio, be still my heart, raves about poet and activist Kathy Jetnil Kijner, who moved world leaders at the summit to tears with her talk. And of course, if you'd like to join in the conversation on the UN Climate Summit, hashtag Climate2014, or, you know, you could just let us know what you think of our show. Tweet us at Terra Informa. Next on Terra Informa, we're talking about creativity. Creating something new when you're so familiar with the old can be challenging. Change is hard. Pulling out the rug from underneath you, diverting from what has already become normal and natural, and diving into the unknown. This is precisely what Canadian artist Stefan Thompson has tested. He's working on shifting his focus to environmental consciousness, so far with great results. Yvette here spoke with Stefan about his art, his inspiration, and what he believes we can learn from his eco-experiment. The way we perceive art is unique, period, end of story. How we feel, how we connect with a piece or don't, and what we can see beyond. Stefan Thompson, Wakefield-based artist, is taking his art beyond the page or beyond the tree. I spoke with Stefan about his art and his role in sustainability.
Okay, well, my name is Stefan Thompson, and I make my living making artwork. And I've been doing that since I was about 21 years old. I was making artwork since I was pretty young, but I started making it as a living since I was 20, 21. I was also at the same time going to university at Carleton for environmental science. And I guess it was probably in my third year or so when we were doing analytical chemistry. And we were looking at cadmium levels in seafood and shellfish. And when I sort of thought, hey, that's the same stuff that's in my red paint. And that sort of started me on like a quest to learn more about what I was using and what I was painting with. So it was a pretty big eye-opener. As the years went by, I sort of got more comfortable with the alternative mediums that I was creating, to the point where I sort of feel like I'm really glad that that's what happened, because I'm creating artwork that I feel is more interesting than probably what I would have been doing if I had used regular paints all those years. I mean, there's various levels of being environmentally friendly with your art materials, but and then it comes down to more sustainable things too, because even non-toxic is still often has a larger environmental footprint when you look at like what paints are made of, which predominantly would be hydrocarbons and metal. I think that metals are like one of the main impacts of painting, because to extract a metal from rock requires a lot of energy and a lot of pollution. And then there's also the solvents, which a lot of the solvents are quite bad for pretty bad for the ozone layer. I think they make up a large quantity of our greenhouse gases. And it's hard to imagine, but when you look at every surface painted, every car, every room, it's all off-gassing of volatile organic compounds. So when it's all added up in every car and every building, every carpet, everything, even T-shirts and everything like colored, you see there's a lot of solvents also going into the atmosphere from paint. So it's kind of a big thing to tackle, but I just did it, and I found after a while it was quite simple, and I think that was my message for a lot of years, was sharing with other artists and like my audience that what I was doing was a non-toxic alternative.
There's actually this really interesting sort of description of your art. It was described as an army of creatures that live in a natural world but have a magical power of outliving their due date. So is there like kind of a, in a haiku or in like a few words, is there a way that you would describe your art?
I don't know, but I can definitely, like, it's very animal-based. I find animals, like, to be one of my main inspirations. And, yeah, expressing emotion through, like, animal forms, I find effective, more so than, at least more interesting than humans. I guess, I don't know, when you look at an animal, we all kind of read their feelings, even though maybe we don't quite understand them. And I find that, like, visually, at least for me, it's interesting to, like, see emotions portrayed through various animals.
So is there a statement that you're making through your art, or is it more so based on the medium and the concept of being an environmentally friendly sort of artist?
Well, the medium thing is mostly what I've talked about for years because it gives me something to talk about. But I don't really want to tell the audience what they should think when they look at it.
You might have heard of the recent pressure that BP Oil is facing due to its sponsorship of arts in the UK.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm curious, what kind of role do you think artists have in activism?
They tend to be people who often portray messages, so I think they have a significant role to play. They're people who spend their time creating, like, images or something that's meant to communicate something. But sometimes it's very personal, and sometimes it's more global. But I think art can certainly be very powerful in creating change. And, yeah, I don't know. Like, for me, a medium has always come up because if I want to create, like, a message through art about change, then I kind of have to change the medium, too, I find. Seems kind of hypocritical to, like, make progressive art without changing the medium as well.
In your opinion, what is the role of art in society, or the artist in society?
Yeah, that's another really big one. I don't think there is really one.
Okay.
Yeah, because, I don't know, I think everyone is kind of like an artist. Everyone is a creator of something. So it doesn't, like, art's become like something you can talk about and put into a box, but really it's like everyone's kind of an artist, and then we just live in this commercial world, so you can like sell anything, so you can sell art, but yeah, I think it's sort of like in the past probably everyone was an artist, you know, and now it's just like some lucky few people realize they can make a living from art.
Stefan suggests that it's not just the artist that can be considering sustainability. There's so many other ways to change the way that we do our regular day-to-day activities. And Stefan is a fantastic example of somebody who's been able to be successful despite entirely changing what he knew.
Well, I always like to say that I think that if people just look into like the sort of technicalities of what they do, I think there's always like a more environmentally friendly way of living, like whether it be like deciding to ride your bike or deciding to like care where your food comes from or deciding to care what paints you're using. I find it's really like, at first it seems like really complicated, especially when our lives are really fast. But if you just sort of like commit to the idea of changing, I find that there's always a solution. And that sort of, this like miracle that happened to me is like, I was like, didn't know if I would keep being able to make money if I changed my medium because it got like so much more rugged at first. But I feel like we're all a part of this world and we all want to survive, and really there should be some kind of like reward for following a more environmentally friendly lifestyle, you know, like whether it be like your own health or your own happiness or money or whatever. Like, I feel like you've got to be like the universe will somehow reward you in some way for like just trying a little harder to like do something that kind of helps everybody. So I don't know, I think it's easier than you think. So that's like what I would like to pass on.
That quote that I shared with Stefan was from apartment613.ca. So Apartment 613 is actually a not-for-profit organization based out of Ottawa that looks at Ottawa's arts and culture. Thanks again to Stefan Thompson for sharing his background and sharing his views with me. This is Yvette Thompson for Terra Informa.
Thanks to Stefan Thompson for sharing with us. Stefan works in several mediums and is starting to explore natural sculpture. You can learn more from Stefan and view his thought-provoking work on his personal website, www.stefanthompson.com. For all you other budding artists out there that are looking to find low VOC, environmentally friendly paints, Stefan recommends Green Planet Paints. The links we've mentioned here are all going to be listed on our website, www.terrainforma.ca. Can I just take a moment and shout out to all of our listeners in Halifax tuning in on local 107.3 FM.
And there is just so much going on these days. Here's this week's edition of What's Happening.
The Council of Canadians is hosting an event on Vancouver Island on Wednesday, October the 1st at Duncan United Church. From 6:30 to 9 p.m., Roger Hunter of the Cowichan Watershed Group and Dan Ferguson of the Cowichan Agricultural Society will present a talk called Sustainability, Food and Water Security in Our Valley. The event is free and all are welcome. Organizers just ask that you bring a dish of finger food to share. Coffee, tea, and juice will all be provided. For more information, you can email cofcevent@gmail.com or check out our website, terrainforma.ca.
In Hamilton, McMaster University's Origins Institute is hosting a public lecture on October 14th at CIBC Hall. The event starts at 8 p.m. and will feature Dr. Frank Hsu from UC San Diego. His talk is titled Reversing Climate Change, Using Carbon to Fight Carbon. Visit the Origins Institute website for more info. We'll post a link on our website as well.
And for all of our listeners in Edmonton with a shopping problem, why not put that cash and energy towards supporting local businesses? Cash Mob and The Local Good are teaming up to organize Cash Mob Does 104th Street. On Tuesday, October 7th at precisely 6:55 p.m., would-be impulse buyers are meeting on the northeast corner of 104th Street and Jasper Avenue to flash mob an unsuspecting shop in the 104th Street shopping district. They'll peruse, purchase, and profess their love for buying local and supporting independent retailers. Details can be found on Eventbrite. We'll also post a link to the event on our website. You can sign up online. Just don't forget to bring your cash and a reusable bag.
And for all of the capers out there tuning in, be sure to check out the Mabou Farmers Market every Sunday from 11 a.m. till 2 p.m. at the arena. Home baking, potted plants, wooden and leather goods, and there's local vegetables, photos, Nova Scotia wines, which are fantastic. So you can make friends with a farmer and support local and heritage products all at the same time. Don't forget to take home something tasty.
Well, that's all the time we have for this week's show. Thanks to our contributors, Chris Chang-Yan Phillips and Yvette Thompson. Thanks, Yvette.
You're welcome.
Thanks to Trevor Chow Fraser for both production and coordination this week, and to Tasmia Nishat for website.
Terra Informa is a production of CJSR 88.5 FM in Edmonton. If you have questions or comments, feel free to send us an email to terra@cjsr.com. We've been your hosts, Yvette Thompson
and Danielle Dalgoy. Join us next week for more great stories from across the nation.